From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the sixth day of April 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And as we close out our program, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated will be here to talk about the agricultural weather forecast and whether or not the Southwest will begin to get a little rainfall for the Oklahoma and Texas hard red winter wheat crops and what happens in the Midwest, too. Along the way, I'll tell you a bit more about that $8 figure I told you yesterday that livestock producers, dairy producers in particular, might be able to afford. Animal scientist and dairy specialist Mike Hutchins from Illinois will be here to take up that subject on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In Chicago, on this Wednesday afternoon, futures at the CME settled the nearby contracts in the soft red winter wheat lower for the day. Nearby May at 4 cents lower, 7.82 1/4, the final price. July at $8.18 1/4 for the new crop, down 4.5, and September at $8.55 3/4, 4.5 cents lower. Hard red July in Kansas City, down 10 1/4 at $9.50 1/4. Back in Chicago from the corn pit, nearby May contract, 7.63, down 3 3/4. July at 7.70 1/2, down 3 1/4, and September futures, $7.03 1/2, down 1/4 cent. December on out were higher for the day, 6.47 1/2, the final trade in the Deese new crop corn, up 3/4 cent. The March at 6.55 3/4, a half higher, and May corn of next year at 6.62, up 3/4. May oats at 3.92, a half higher. May soybeans at 13.76 1/2, 3 1/4 cents higher. July futures there at 13.88 1/4 in the bean pit, up 3.5. The August at 13.89, 2 3/4 higher. And then the November futures down there, down 2.5 cents at $13.76 1/4. May bean meal at $3.55.60, up $2. May bean oil at $58.78, 7 cents lower on the afternoon. CME live cattle futures finished 120.87 1/2, down 87 1/2 cents. June at 118.25, $1.75 lower. April feeders at 135.70, down $1.40. May at 136.45, down $1.22 1/2. And April lean hogs at $93.97 1/2, up 27 1/2. But the May were down 85 at 102.10. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, May contract $108.83 a barrel, up 49 cents. Ethanol at $2.70. That's a penny and 9 tenths lower for the day. Natural gas at $4.14 3/10, 8 8/10 lower. And the RBOB at $3.18 4/10, down a penny and 7 tenths. Heating oil or diesel fuel just about 0.1 cent higher at $3.18 6/10 a cent. And the gold futures on the day at $1,400.57 and 70 cents, up $5.90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,422, just about 28 points at this hour. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon in the Urbana-Champaign area. Partly sunny skies, a high near 68 degrees today. West-southwest winds at 13 to 16 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 26 tonight. Mostly cloudy, a low of 46. West winds between 7 and 10. Again, they'll gust up, this time just to 15. And Thursday for tomorrow, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a high near 65 degrees. East winds between 9 and 14. They'll gust all the way to 20. Thursday night should see showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy, a low around 55 degrees. Southeast winds at 10 to 16, gusting to 23. Chance of precip Thursday night, by the way, at 60%. A Friday forecast looks for a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. That before 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Central Time. Partly sunny skies, a high near 73 degrees. Southwest winds at about 9 miles an hour. And then by the time we get to Friday night, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy and low of 57. Saturday, just 30% chance of showers continues. Partly sunny and 76. Sunday, of showers and thunderstorms. Sunny, breezy, a high of 82 degrees on Sunday. More on the agricultural weather forecast when we talk with Drew Lerner at the bottom of the hour right here from IPM. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On the phone line with us today to take a look at the agricultural futures markets, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good Wednesday afternoon to you, Paul.
Good Wednesday afternoon to you, Todd, on a pretty nice day here in Oakland, Illinois, as farmers prepare their planters. We have heard some planting going on today.
Indeed. Hey, you know, I want you to take a look at some of the outside markets because there are things happening there that are pretty interesting. I think gold futures yesterday maybe made new all-time highs. Did they do that again today?
I think so. The high in the gold today on the April contract was 1462.30, and the last trade was 1457.20, up 5.40. The outside markets like gold and silver are quite strong, and then continues to basically say that you know, people are investing in precious metals instead of you know, they're worried about foreign currencies and probably weaker currencies on in the world financial markets.
I made note that the May corn futures only traded, what, a 9.5 cent trading range today. I caught that narrow when I was giving the settlement prices earlier in the day. It seems a little odd to call 9.5 cents narrow, but in these days it is. What'd you make of that trade?
Well, we did see a lot of people rolling out of May contracts into other months today. We also were very intrigued yesterday with the Feed Grain Council president basically saying that the Chinese stocks of old corn in their reserve is extremely small.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, with this, you know, traders basically, there was even a rumor today that China was reselling some old corn into the U.S. market that they've purchased, canceling contracts. And, of course, one would look at this very large spread between old crop corn and new crop corn with the basic premise that if the Chinese buy some corn, they'd probably be a little more aggressive as far as buying new crop corn's concerned. And then there's this basically other point that I want to make about the corn acreage, the crop. Historically, five out of the last 7 years, the corn acreage goes up 1.8 million acres. Of course, this means smaller soybean acres. And, of course, the other thing that we're basically watching out is this continuation of people getting ready, set, go, preparing for to plant a lot of acreage of corn. And, hey, I think it's possible.
You think it's possible 1.8 million acres is enough to really turn the tide? That would put it at, what, almost 94, right?
Mm.
So that'd be a pretty good size acreage.
That's almost to the that's a big one, isn't it, when it's all said and done? Of course, we have a lot of acres like in the Dakotas that are a gulp, too. I think the one thing that it is that's not a surprise there is that it's more economical to plant corn than soybeans. And if weather permits, you know, I think that we will see a big, big acreage go in.
You know, it's more economical today to plant corn than it is soybeans. So the question is, will it be more economical by the time that somebody might make a new crop sale? So your job is to help them protect that that financial risk. What are you telling them?
Well, one thing we do note is on the old crop corn is there's been a tremendous amount of old crop corn being moved into the marketplace. And of course, it's always fun to have, you know, a big parcel of corn at the $8 mark, but I get the feeling that people are moving and have moved quite a bit of corn into the marketplace. Well, we think that with that scenario of more acres, that a person does have to go in and consider buying. We did encourage it before the report of buying 650 calls and selling 750 calls, and now, of course, the idea of buying $7 calls and selling $8 calls and maybe writing nearby puts in a particular month. We find that we've had some of our customers do that, but as a general rule, thanks and click type of marketing strategy in that, because people just don't want to invest in replacing corn sales. And it's one of the interesting marketing phenomena that I watch. And once we raise it, we sell it, and we aren't going to worry about ever replacing it back. And, of course, this is, you know, one of the unusual things in behavioral economics that I'm going to grow old and trying to understand.
So your preference would be, I take it.
If I was a big, heavy seller here, I would replace it at least 50, 60%. And it's a pretty cheap investment, you know, from the $7 to $8 mark. And this does also encourage people to sell corn on those hot, dry days when we know it needs to be sold, and even when the private weather forecasters are a little stingy on predicting rain.
You're doing the same thing with soybean?
Well, not so much. And the general feeling is I think that the bean market could probably take care of itself if we do have this smaller bean acreage planted. My contention is I do think that we will see the Chinese come rolling back in and buy some old crop beans, but at $14 on old crop beans, that's a pretty good price too. I think I would rather wait a little while on the soybeans just so I could find out what the bean acreage is, but I am of opinion of replacing corn sales in the new crop.
Last little bit, and we don't have much time left. What do you think about the reports coming up this week?
They're going to be very important. It'll be a benchmark, and it's always interesting to see how the government tries to jiggle those figures as far as the carryover is concerned.
Thank you so much.
Have a nice day.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. Now, if you'd like to hear Paul again, you can always do that on our website at WILLAG.org. We post everything there from our pre-opening market report to our closing market report each and every day. And the midday update, too. If you can't get to the website or hear us on one of our radio stations, then dial this number. It's 217-333-3434. We call that our mobile analyst portal. It's voicemail updated at 10:15 and 3:15 each and every day with either the opening of the closing numbers and a bit of analysis. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with all today's agricultural news.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In agricultural news, under a budget plan unveiled yesterday by House Budget Chair Paul Ryan, agriculture programs could face a roughly $3 billion a year cut over the next decade. The House budget plan appears to challenge farmers to take some cuts in direct payments and crop insurance. In his plan, The Path to Prosperity, Ryan stated that farmers appear to be doing well and could manage if Congress were to, quote, reduce the fixed payments that go to farmers irrespective of price levels. Further, agriculture needs to, quote, reform the open-end nature of the government's support for crop insurance. Ryan also indicates in his plan that the House Agriculture Committee would tackle these topics in the 2012 Farm Bill, stating that, quote, this proposal assumes that these savings do not take effect until the beginning of the next farm bill. Two major U.S. barge lines this week increased charges for grain barges loaded in June and beyond by as much as 50%, and other barge operators may soon follow suit. The moves will increase costs for grain shippers that do not promptly unload barges. Barge lines are saying that they don't want their barges used as storage. Trade experts say it will make it a lot more difficult for grain companies in the Gulf to manage their pipeline and their logistics. USDA is proposing a mandatory test and hold period for meat and poultry products that it says will increase food safety. The Agriculture Department said the mandatory hold would reduce the number of outbreaks of foodborne illnesses. The Food Safety and Inspection Service said 44 serious recalls from 2007 to 2009 could have been prevented if such a rule had been used. USDA said it would accept comments for 90 days following publication of the rule in the Federal Register. Pesticide applicators would not be required to obtain national pollutant discharge elimination system permits under a bill introduced in the Senate. The permits are part of a new EPA program set for implementation in October. Senator Pat Roberts, a Republican from Kansas, the main sponsor of the legislation and the ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee, says that the planned EPA program is unnecessary. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Did you happen to see the Farm Doc Daily piece released from Gary Schnitke and Nick Paulson, ag economist at the U of I this morning? If not, you can find it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. This one's titled, Putting Agricultural Spending into Perspective. I'll talk to Nick Paulson tomorrow morning, and we'll hear that later on this program. But let me give you a couple of the graphs and charts. Nick and Gary decided to take a look at the spending, and here's what they found from the Congressional Budget Office and the United States Department of Agriculture. Social Security is the largest percentage of total federal outlays at 19.3%, defense at 18.6%, Medicare at 14.2%, Medicaid at 7.1%. Interest that we pay at 5.3, the government, that is, and the United States Commodity and Crop Insurance Programs. Those are the programs directed at producers, farmers, just 0.5%. So if you'd like to see those numbers and put into perspective the crop and commodity programs, you can do that in the article that has been written for the Farm Doc Daily website. It's called Putting Agricultural Spending into Perspective, written by Gary Schnitke and Nick Paulson. I'll talk to Nick tomorrow morning. You can find it at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now up next, we'll continue our conversation about agricultural economics, this time around as it relates to, well, an input, feedstuffs, corn in particular, and the dairy cow. You know, the high price of corn has the livestock sector considering just how to deal with those feed costs. I'll have more on how dairy farms should change up rations, or maybe not. The price of all commodities has gone up dramatically, and it means it costs a lot more to feed an animal. And livestock producers are trying to deal with those realities for the second time in 3 years. The last time around was in 2008, and some in the dairy sector did not weather that year well, says Mike Hutchins, because they took their cows off feed.
The bottom line, our dairy producers have to realize, you can't cheat the bacteria. They don't read the farm magazines knowing the price of corn went up to $7.60. They just know we need certain carbon structures here to produce. And we never want to slow them down because they're not in the union. As a result, they produce 80% of my energy and 60% of my amino acids. So as a result, I got to make sure those rumen microbes are maxed out, even if the price of corn appears to be high.
You heard that right. The University of Illinois animal scientist said, even if the price of corn appears to be high.
It's interesting to us that if you look at a program called Sesame, this looks at 30 different feedstuffs in the Midwest. And one of my colleagues put this together for me, and actually corn, believe it or not, dairy farmers, is underpriced. In other words, we can afford to pay even more than we are now when you look at all other feedstuffs, looking at energy sources. So that's an interesting way to look at it as well. We can probably pay over $8 a bushel, and still it is a better buy than looking at other alternative feedstuffs. Stuffs other than such things as corn silage and distiller's grains.
Sesame is a software program from The Ohio State University. It's a $10 download and can be found at sesamesoft.com. It allows the user to compare the price of 30 typical feedstuffs used in the Midwest for dairy rations.
And it looks at such things as energy and protein forms and fiber sources and comes up with a commonality which says, corn is worth $8.50 a bushel. That's what it's worth. And the current price is $7.50. It is still considered a good buy, although many of my livestock producers would just roll their eyes and say, you've got to be kidding me.
He's not. The price of feed looks like it will remain very high through the summer months. The price of milk, on the other hand, is projected to fall through the end of the calendar year. Hutchins says a dairy cannot afford to take cows off feed because it takes too long to bring them back into full production. He suggests using sesame to find the break-even price at full feed and that it will be worth not making money in the short run in order to just come out on the other end of this financial crunch. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. The folks at the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana, are on the line to talk about the cash grain market. Scott Butcher is with us. Hi, Scott. How are you today?
Great. How are you, Todd?
I'm very well. So I want to hear whether you've been able to draw much corn out of the area as we moved past $7.
Yeah, we definitely started to see things pick up again as we got closer, especially, some of the levels a couple of days ago. We were up over, 775, up in, closer to 780, and, really that's pretty attractive to about anybody that has old corn left to sell.
Enough to keep the ethanol plant chugging along nicely?
Yeah, definitely got things rolling.
Margins are still good there or not?
Yeah, things are still well. I mean, it's definitely a challenge here as the markets, move back and forth, but I think it's still profitable.
And how tight are your bids at this point?
Right now, we're actually positive basis. Mm-hmm. We're five over, so pretty good for this time of year.
I suppose that is pretty good for this time of year. When you look around, are they having trouble finding soybeans to meet end-user demands?
I think so. I think the processors, their bids are kind of reflecting that now as they're all also positive as well. I think they're, really struggling to find beans right now. I think what's kind of happened is, we normally see this happen, later in the summer, and, this year especially, it's just all happening a lot earlier maybe than what they anticipated.
And do you think producers are now thinking, hey, I've done a little, I'm not going to worry about it, I'm going to get in the field, and will things get even more positive on the basis side?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, most of the guys that have beans left are, they're going to wait until after they get planting done and then see what basis looks like then.
What are you hearing from producers on new crop sales?
I think most new crop sales are probably, a lot of guys are 30 to 40%. So, they've got a decent amount done, but everybody is still pretty skeptical as far as, what the markets are going to do and what they are going to look like in the future.
And recommendations from the house there at the Andersons are for what?
I would say probably about that. It really feels like being 30 to 40% sold, corn and soybeans both, seems like a good area to be right now. It seems like we have a lot of, obviously we've got a lot of time left for new crop sales. We've got a long way to go to get this crop in the ground and grown and harvested. So, it really feels like we have a lot of time left.
And we have a little time left here. Do you think we've bought any more corn acres in your area yet?
I don't think so. I think everything, most of the decisions are already made. There might be a little bit of fluctuation here and there, but I think that most of those acres were already made.
Thanks much, Scott.
Yep.
Scott Butcher is with the Anderson's Climbers Facility. He's in Delphi, Indiana. I'll return in just 2 minutes when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated will be here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
It's National Caramel Popcorn Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1859, Massachusetts created the first inspector of milk position in the U.S. It was not long before a report showed that milk sold in Boston restaurants was often diluted with as much as 40% water, and chemicals were added to make the diluted milk appear white.
The diluted milk sold for as much as 5 cents a glass when fair market value for good milk was 8 cents a quart. In 1930, Twinkies went on sale for the first time with a banana cream filling. But in World War II, there was a banana shortage, and vanilla cream became the standard filling. By the way, early Twinkies had to be eaten almost immediately. The eggs, milk, and butter gave the Twinkie a shelf life of just 2 days. In 1932, C. Glenn King at the University of Pittsburgh isolated vitamin C from lemon juice. In 1938, Roy J. Plunkett accidentally discovered Teflon. And in 1954, TV dinners were introduced to the public. C.A. Swanson and Sons introduced the first TV dinner, roast turkey with stuffing and gravy, sweet potatoes and peas. It sold for 98 cents and came in an aluminum tray ready to pop into the oven. Supposedly, executive director Gerald Thomas came up with the idea when the company had tons of leftover turkey from Thanksgiving. The idea for the aluminum trays came from the trays used for airline food. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason on the phone line with us. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, it's really dry, according to USDA numbers anyway, and what the crop production and progress report showed in Oklahoma and Texas for the winter wheat crop there. Will they get relief, or have they?
Well, they have not, and they definitely need it. You're absolutely right. It's pretty serious, gloom and doomy looking down that way right now. But there is a frontal boundary that's supposed to be moving through the region this weekend, the Saturday into Sunday. And I think there's a fairly good chance that the dynamics in the atmosphere will support a line of thunderstorms that will march through some of that crop country. Now, I don't know that we are going to get a good precipitation to evolve in the western half of the Texas Panhandle or southwest Kansas. But the eastern part of the Texas Panhandle may start seeing some thunderstorm activity late Saturday afternoon or evening, and a line of storms will then form and shoot up into central Kansas and march itself eastward from there. So some of that dry region will get a little bit of precipitation, but it's not going to be enough, and we are going to have some follow-up precipitation to make a difference to the long-run picture here. Now, there is another system which I'm more anxious about to see how it's going to turn out. It is supposed to evolve sometime around midweek next week, maybe late Tuesday night or Wednesday, about a week from now, actually. And that system still has potential of developing into something a little bit more significant for some of that southern hard red wheat country, but it's just too darn far out in the forecast right now to focus in on to a great deal of confidence. But there is a chance for some more precipitation at that point.
What's it look like for the Midwest over the coming days?
Well, we are going to see a couple of weather systems moving across the region. Most of the precipitation is not expected to be heavy, at least not until we get into the weekend. That same strong frontal boundary that I mentioned for hard red wheat country will march right across the heart of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and down into Kentucky and the Delta as we get involved with the late Saturday night, more likely to be Sunday. And it will bring some hefty amounts of rain and perhaps some severe weather. Until that point in time, I don't think we're going to see a large volume of rain, but we have some showers that will be passing through the region. Looks like this will be tomorrow night into Friday morning, and we may pick up on a half inch to a local three-quarter inch amount of moisture at that point. But the bigger rains that come on for this weekend will probably be more like quarter to three-quarters inch, and maybe some local totals to an inch and a quarter, maybe even as much as an inch and a half. The good news about all this is that the producers that are down in the southeast corner of Missouri, extreme southern Illinois, western Kentucky, maybe the Evansville area in Indiana, those areas may get enough warmth here over the next few days ahead of the bigger rain event that they may actually be able to get out and work some fields with soil temperatures getting back up to the point of germinating some corn seed and firming up the soil that might be well-timed.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Drew.
Thank you, and have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. Have a great day. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.